Today is 10 October, Kruger Day. It used to be a public holiday in South Africa, as well it should be, one of the greatest statesmen in history, not just for South Africa. Paul Kruger was, in his own lifetime, one of the most respected men in the world. And he was the pioneer statesman for conservation, for example, long before even President Teddy Roosevelt initiated national parks in America. We already had President Paul Kruger initiating the Sabi Game Reserve, which is today Kruger National Park, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, national park in the world. He was also highly respected in his day by all the nations of Europe. In fact, in 1902, it would be true to say that the Boers were the most respected people in the world, the most admired. Paul Kruger was the most respected statesman in the world, and the British were the most despised. That would have been true then. Interesting how in just a couple of generations, the media had so twisted things that the Boers were some of the most hated and despised people in the world. Oom Paul was born on his grandfather's farm at Bulhoek, 10th of October, 1825. Paul's parents were Caspar Kruger and Elsie Steyn. Drought, locusts, migrating herds of buck forced them to lead a nomadic existence in the Karoo. Paul Kruger was hardened by nature and schooled by the Bible. He was a man of the book. He knew the Word of God. He received only 3 months of formal classroom-type learning, but most of his education was home education. He read the Bible daily. As a young boy of 10 years old, Paul Kruger set out on the Great Trek under Hendrik Potgieter, one of the very first of the trekkers, as just a boy of 10. His father, Caspar Kruger, joined the Great Trek party of Hendrik Potgieter in one of the very first expeditions, 1835. At age 11, he was one of the men who successfully defeated the previously unbeaten Madibili impis of Mzilikazi at the Battle of Vegkop. Just 30 men, Paul Kruger among them, fighting off the previously unbeaten hordes of the Madibili, of Mzilikazi. And these are some of the stitchworks at Voortrekker Monument of that Battle of Vegkop, where all ages, men and women, grandmothers, children, were all involved in the battle. The Battle of Vegkop battle site has a most interesting monument, and this memorial is so expressly Christian. Let me read from what the plaque there says. The stacked stones at the base symbolize the encompassing threat to the past and to the present, the total onslaught against Christian civilization. From this hostile situation, there arises the powerful figure of a leader. Although one foot is rooted in the conflict, he has unflinching faith in victory. In his left arm, he holds the Holy Bible. In his right hand, a firearm, which in noble submission to God points downward and against which the hostile assegais break and snap like the shield of faith. The sculptor has embodied in the monument the words of Ephesians 6:16, above all, taking up the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. With this inspiring word of God in our hearts, and by accepting the responsibility to defend ourselves, we are assured of victory. So what a magnificent picture. The shield of faith, kneeling in submission to Almighty God, appealing to heaven for victory, the Bible in his left hand, the rifle in his right hand, and the arrows are snapping and breaking and bending before it. Paul Kruger had a rough upbringing on the trail, and in the wilderness he became proficient in horse riding, hunting, marksmanship. He once had a misfire with his musket, far from home, and I think he was a very young teenager. Was he only 12 or 13? He had to amputate his thumb with his penknife and cauterize the wound. After his baptism of fire at the Battle of Vegkop, he served in numerous campaigns against raiding tribes, including the Makapan in 1854 and Mapele in 1858. He was a leader in the First Anglo-Boer War of 1880 to 1881. This is what brought him to political prominence, was when the British seized the Transvaal in 1877. And that's quite a story too. Sir Rider Haggard, who was later the author of King Solomon's Mines and She, he was at that time not a sir, he was a member of the Natal Mounted Police. And Sir Rider Haggard was one of 11 Natal policemen shipped off to the Transvaal. They rode into Pretoria, brought down the Union Jack, brought down the Vierkleur, raised up the Union Jack in Church Square in front of the Volksraad, and declared the Transvaal Republic is now the Transvaal Colony under the British Crown. Now, T.F. Burgess was at that moment the president of the Transvaal, and he was a super unpopular president. In fact, Paul Kruger could not support him because of his liberal policies. And amongst other things, T.F. Burgess had the audacity to mint a coin with his face on it, which was considered so outrageous. And he tried to tax the Boers. Now, they'd just gone on a great trek to get away from being taxed by the British, so they weren't going to put up with that. So when T.F. Burgess called for the Boers to rally as commanders to defend the Republic, no one responded. And 11 men of the Natal Mounted Police took the Transvaal. However, you could see Sir Rider Haggard was part of a very interesting kind of backdrop. But then the British committed the cardinal error. They tried to tax the Boers as well. And at this point, Paul Kruger entered politics. He went around, gathered massive petitions, actually went to Britain, went to Queen Victoria, presented a petition to restore their independence in accordance with the Sand River Convention of 1854. And when the British refused to act, he came back, organized at Pardekraal, where they laid the stones and they determined to fight. Paul Kruger's father first settled close to what today is Potchefstroom. He later moved to what today is Rustenburg. At age 16, Paul Kruger carved his own farm out of the wilderness at the foot of the Magaliesberg Mountains. At age 17, he married Anna Marie de Plessis. His wife and child died in January 1846. He's a young man, not even out of his teens. He had already built his own farm, married, and lost his wife and child. He then married again in 1847, Gesine Susanna de Plessis, no close relation to his previous wife. Together, they were blessed with 7 daughters and 9 sons. So if you add the one that died, that would make 17 children. Before the end of his life, he had over 144 grandchildren. They took the Dominion mandate seriously. Paul Kruger was a deeply devout believer who studied the scriptures daily. He memorized most of the Bible by heart. He was a founding member of the Gereformeerde Kerk, which was formed in Rustenburg in 1859. Most people are not aware of the fact that the Dutch Reformed Church boycotted the Great Trek. In fact, they would not allow any of their dominees to go on the Great Trek. And while we know of Saurus Elius was not a theologically trained, ordained man, but he was a fervent Bible believer, well-read Bible Christian, and therefore he served as chaplain, but he was not an ordained minister. The first Dutch Reformed minister to the Voortrekkers was Andrew Murray, the famous Andrew Murray. And he was sent to the Orange Free State and served for 11 years as a minister to the Voortrekkers from 1849 through to 1860, when he was then called to Worcester and when the 1860 revival occurred. But so the Gereformeerde Kerk was specifically formed to provide for an alternative for the people who were not being catered for, because the Dutch Reformed Church at the time regarded the Great Trek as rebellion against the lawful government. Even if it was the British government, it was still considered the lawful government. And so the Gereformeerde Kerk was specifically founded for the Voortrekkers. The Doppers, as the Gereformeerde Kerk members were known, separate from the Nederduitse Gereformeerde Kerk over a new hymn book in particular. And they were, of course, a Psalms-focused worship. They believed that the modern hymn book contradicted some of the principles of the foundational document, the Synod of Dort, the Heidelberg Catechism, and the Belgic Confession. The Gereformeerde Kerk founded the Potchefstroom University College for Higher Christian Education. And I still remember going to Potchefstroom University and seeing the HCE sign for higher Christian education, which sadly is not used anymore. It's now called University of the Northwest, and although doubtless infiltrated and subverted a lot, it still is probably one of the finest universities in the country in terms of Christian principles, and there's a lot of individuals and faculty members on the Potchefstroom or University of Northwest campus who are very friendly to and supportive of Christian work such as Kwasi Bantu Mission, their Cedar College of Education, and I know Makanya College, Theological College, and others have relationships with the Potchefstroom Theological Faculty. The Khalifa Medikirk uses only hymns from the Bible, mainly the Psalms and other scripture remainings directly drawn from the Bible. Paul Kruger's first involvement in politics began at age 25 when he represented the Transvaal at the Sand River Convention, 1852, which Andrew Murray was a key representative at, and Andrew Murray was the one chosen to go to Britain to articulate these concerns, present these concerns to get it ratified by the British by 1854. Paul Kruger was a field coronet in the Commandos, and he eventually became Commandant General of the South African Republic. He was appointed member of the Commission of the Volksraad to draw up the constitution for the Transvaal Republic. He was present at the Sand River Convention, in which the British government recognized the independence of the Transvaal and of the Orange Free State. In 1875, he was elected as a member of the Executive Council, and shortly after that, he became vice president of the Transvaal. When President T.F. Burgess came to power in 1872, Paul Kruger could not support his liberal policies and resigned in early 1873. It was the declining popularity of Burgess that led to Lord Shepstone to initiate this bizarre episode where 11 mounted police, including Rider Haggard, rode into the Transvaal, into Church Square to bring down the Fairclough and raise up the Union Jack and annex the Transvaal to the British Empire by proclamation without opposition. So unpopular was Burgess and his policies that not one Boer responded to his call for the commandos to defend their independence. However, as the British began to tax the farmers, Paul Kruger became the most vocal leader of the resistance to foreign rule, as evidenced in Pardon Crawl, where they gathered and, reminiscent of the days of Joshua, brought rocks, which they piled up. Now, the original Pardon Crawl monument, which was set up, was deliberately dynamited, blown up by the British during the occupation, and rebuilt after the Anglo-Boer War. At a historic gathering at Pardon Crawl in December 1880, the citizens restored the Republic, electing Paul Kruger, Pietje Beer, and M.W. Pretorius, a descendant of Andreas Pretorius, to form a triumvirate to lead their republic. After Transvaal was annexed by Britain in 1877, Paul Kruger led the resistance movement, visiting Britain as the leader of a deputation protesting the violation of the Sand River Convention and demanding the restoration of the Transvaal independence. After the stunning Boer victory at the Battle of Majuba in 1881, which saw the British General Colley, who was also British High Commissioner for all of South Africa, killed in action, and the Fairclough was raised on Mount Majuba. That had three major battles, each of which the Boers won. In fact, four if you also count the one in the Transvaal itself, but three in Natal itself. Paul Kruger then played a vital role in the negotiations with the British, which led to the restoration of Transvaal independence. So on the 30th of December 1880, at age 55, Paul Kruger was elected President of the Transvaal Republic, or the South African Republic, as it was also known. He visited Europe on a number of occasions and was received with great honor in Germany, France, Belgium, Netherlands, and Spain. In the elections of 1883, 1888, 1893, 1898, Paul Kruger was victorious each time, defeating his main rival, Pietje Beer. It seemed that the politics at that time was quite simple. Do you want Pietje Beer or Paul Kruger as president? And Paul Kruger won each time. The discovery of gold on the Witwatersrand, White Waters Ridge, in 1884, what the British called the richest piece of real estate on earth, had far-reaching political repercussions as the Uitlanders poured into the Transvaal, dramatically changing the demographics and threatening to overwhelm the independence of the Boer Republic. and the capital Pretoria was dwarfed by now the burgeoning mining town of Johannesburg, or John's Mountain. In his memoirs, Paul Kruger declared that instead of rejoicing at the discovery of gold, they should have wept, because of how it would cause their land to be soaked in blood. Just as an aside, Cecil John Rhodes, who was the founder of Rhodesia, was at that time the Prime Minister of the Cape. And Cecil John Rhodes' policies were very pro-Boer. Cecil Rhodes was not the classic imperialist most people think of. Cecil Rhodes was certainly for bringing the whole world under the crown, and certainly for Cape to Cowra Railway and the British dominating. But he was incredibly pro-Boer until gold was discovered in the Transvaal. Cecil Rhodes was not anti-Boer. He wrote the Boers into his Rhodes scholarship as he wrote the Germans. He said, the greatest nations on earth are Germany, the United States, America, and Britain, and no power on earth could resist them if they stay united. The biggest catastrophe would be for these Protestant nations to fight one another. And so his idea of having the Rhodes scholarships were to have British, Americans, Boers, and Germans studying together, student exchange, so on, so that these nations would never go to war. In the First Anglo-Boer War, Cecil John Rhodes opposed the British invasion and supported the Boer case for independence. Cecil Rhodes got elected to the Prime Ministership of the Cape because of his pro-Boer policies, and it was Afrikaners in the Cape who voted for him overwhelmingly, more than English speakers. And it was the Afrikaner Bond of Hofmeyr that actually ensured the support for Cecil Rhodes being Prime Minister of the Cape. And so Cecil Rhodes wanted Afrikaans to be recognized as equal language. He was very pro-Boer. In fact, he was even pro-Zulu and anti the British invasion of Zululand. But as a businessman and as a miner, when gold was discovered in the Transvaal, that changed everything. So it wasn't that he's anti-Boer. He's just super pro-gold and diamonds, obviously, which is where he started, which explains why Cecil Rhodes shifted from being against interfering with the independence of the Transvaal to conniving taking over. Not that he ever supported the scorched earth policies of Kitchener or Milner, because he saw the Boers as an essential ally in his goal. He didn't want Africa or the empire ruled by Whitehall. He despised the British Foreign Office. Cecil Rhodes despised the British government. He wanted a loyalty to the crown, but he wanted self-governing countries throughout. With allegiance to the Queen, yes, but he despised any instruction from Whitehall, from the British Foreign Office, from Chamberlain, who is the British Foreign Secretary, and so on. To him, the people on the ground know best. So if people think of him as an imperialist in the classic mold of centralization, no, he wanted a decentralized system, and he saw the Germans, Americans, the Boers, and English as friends and allies and must work together. So it would be wrong to put Cecil Rhodes in too neat a little box. He's a more complex person than that. But Paul Kruger and Cecil Rhodes became enemies, of course, but that was because of the gold, which is tragic. You can just think the worst thing that happened to Sudan, South Sudan, since independence, is the discovery of oil. People will fight over oil and gold and diamonds. Paul Kruger was far-sighted in his concern for nature conservation. He's credited with establishing the initial Sabi Game Reserve in the Eastern Transvaal, which has grown to the greatest game reserve on earth, the Kruger National Park. He is the pioneer statesman when it comes to conservation. It's quite right that National Park is called Kruger National Park. Paul Kruger displayed tremendous wisdom and restraint in how he handled the treachery of some prominent miners in their attempt to foment revolution. And on the left, we've got Leander Starr Jamieson, Cecil Rhodes's faithful, loyal, second-in-command, most trusted advisor, who led the Jamieson raid. It's hard to believe that Cecil Rhodes could not have known of it or approved of it, because Jamieson must have thought that he was doing Cecil Rhodes's will. In whether he got a direct order or not, the Jamieson raid, of course, destroyed the political career of Cecil Rhodes, who had to resign as Prime Minister of the Cape. Back then, if a politician made a terrible mistake. They were honor bound to resign. Doesn't seem our present bunch have that sense. Interesting that Paul Kruger did not listen to the will of his people. His people wanted these traitors, the local miners and so on, who were meant to be Transvaalers, executed for treason, because they had fomented a revolution, failed one. But Paul Kruger recognized that mercy was better than justice on this occasion. And he handed over all of the leaders to the British to punish, which British didn't do. But the point is, why foment war with the British at this point? The Jameson raid had actually woken up the Boers to the threat. And they realized, in fact, I think it was Piet Joubert who informed them, we don't have enough ammunition to fight a war for a week. And so after Jameson raid, Kruger started to buy massive amounts of weaponry from using the taxes they'd gotten from the miners to buy Mausers and Krupp cannons and ammunition from Germany, because they knew we will be attacked. Again, this Jameson raid was a blessing in disguise, in the sense that it alerted the people to the threat the British Empire now posed to their independence. Instead of hanging the plotters or imprisoning the invaders, as his people demanded, Paul Kruger handed them over to the British government to deal with. And here you have Leander Starr Jameson and his co-plotters, who were effectively the first government of Southern Rhodesia, all part of the British South Africa Company of Cecil Rhodes. Here they are being sent off by boat to Britain to be tried. If you know Rudyard Kipling's great poem, If You Can Keep Your Head While All About You Are Losing Theirs and Blaming It on You, that was written as Rudyard Kipling said, based on the life of Leander Starr Jameson. Leander Starr Jameson risked all, lost all, started again. Do you know Leander Starr Jameson went from this low point in his life, when he is internationally disgraced, to being a Prime Minister of the Cape? How do you survive and come back from that kind of political debacle? And so Rudyard Kipling said, Leander Starr Jameson's my model for the poem If. Of course, Paul Kruger lost a lot of support amongst his own people for being so generous and gracious and merciful and forgiving to these invaders and traitors. But there are numerous amusing stories of Oom Paul on state visits overseas. On one occasion, he walked into a French banquet hall only to immediately turn around and walk out saying, I'm sorry, I wasn't aware that you women weren't dressed yet. As a protest against the immoral fashions prevalent in Paris, and had to find some shawls to cover them up properly so that he would come back into the event that was hosting him as a foreign head of state. When President Paul Kruger announced that any church in Pretoria could receive an acre free for them to build a house of worship on, and, for example, you've got the Hereformeerde Kerk almost directly opposite from Paul Kruger's presidential house, Kruger House, the Dopper Church, opposite from Paul Kruger's house there. He was approached by a Jewish rabbi who requested his acre. So Paul thought for a moment, then responded that he could have only half an acre, as the Jews only believe half the Bible. When the rabbi invited the president to dedicate the synagogue, Paul solemnly removed his hat, declared, in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, I dedicate this synagogue to the glory of God. So this might be the only synagogue in the world dedicated in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Don't expect to see a plaque on that in the synagogue. And the president was dressed in his top hat and black suit on the veranda for any citizen to come past for cook sisters, rusks and coffee, and discuss with the president their concerns. Very accessible. With the radical economic and political challenges that followed the discovery of gold on the Witwatersrand, President Kruger was concerned that the miners would soon outvote the farmers. In fact, the Uitlander problem was so severe, Paul Kruger explained it this way. He said, if I am riding in my Osava and I see you and your family walking along the path and I offer you a ride in my Osava, you do not then have the right to say, well, there's more of us now than you. You give us the reins and this Osava belongs to us. He said, the Uitlanders are welcome as gastarbeiters, as guest workers, but you don't have the right to take what is not yours, to take ours. So to counter this possibility, he now made conditions of naturalization more demanding and started to build a ring of forts around Pretoria, knowing the moment for fighting is coming. In 1890, the government restricted the Uitlander franchise for presidential and Volksraad elections to naturalized citizens who'd been in the country at least 14 years, which doesn't seem that unreasonable. A second Volksraad was created to represent the Uitlander interest to be elected by naturalized citizens who had been at least 2 years in the country. This seems super reasonable and thoughtful to me, but Sir Alfred Milner, you would have had to come on a road called Milner Road to get to the mission this morning, a very duplicitous and unsavory character, this Milner. The British High Commissioner in South Africa was an ardent imperialist of the worst kind, committed to agitating Uitlander dissent and opposition to Kruger's government in the Transvaal, and wanting to absorb the Transvaal and the Orange Free State into British South Africa. You can see the way the map was being painted red from the Cape, which had stretched all the way up to Zeeland at this stage, and at this stage also Lesotho. Lesotho had requested British to make them a protectorate. They were a nation of horse thieves, stealing horses and cattle from the Free State farmers, and when the Free State farmers were organizing a commander to come and get their cattle and horses back, King Mosheshwe pleaded with the British to make them protected so they could keep their ill-gotten gains. But you can see how the British had to bypass the Orange Free State and Transvaal and take Bechuana land, what today is Botswana, southern and northern Rhodesia, up to Nyasaland, what today is Malawi. And obviously, this is kind of in the way. It would have managed fine if they hadn't discovered gold there. You'll recall the Orange River and the Vaal River is the point at which the Orange Free State by the Sand River Convention is understood to be. But Kimberley diamond mines were found on the Orange Free State side of the Orange and Vaal Rivers. So the British redrew the map, putting Kimberley in their side, and giving some compensation to the Orange Free State, which was, in fact, ridiculously small, considering what they'd just stolen from them. But with hindsight, the Orange Free State got a few decades more peace by allowing the British to steal Kimberley from them, which is why Kimberley's in the Cape instead of in the Orange Free State. Whereas the Transvaal, they couldn't do that because it was smack in the middle. Witwatersrand, richest piece of real estate on earth. And so we come to the Anglo-Boer War, where the struggle was for the Transvaal Republic, but the Orange Free State, as a principled state under President Martinus Steyn, was determined to stand with their brother republic, convinced that a threat to one republic was a threat to both. So Arthur Conan Doyle, who is famous for the Sherlock Holmes books, wrote in his book The Great Anglo-Boer War, "Take a community of Dutchmen of the type of those who defended themselves for 50 years against all the power of Spain, at a time when Spain was the greatest power in the world. Intermix them with the strain of those inflexible French Huguenots who gave up home and fortune and left the country forever at the time of the revocation of the Edict of Nantes. The product must obviously be one of the most rugged, virile, and conquerable races ever seen upon earth. Take this formidable people and train them for seven generations in constant warfare against savage men and ferocious beasts in circumstances under which no weakling could survive. Place them so that they acquire exceptional skill with weapons and in horsemanship. Give them a country that is eminently suited to the tactics of the huntsman, the marksman, and the rider. Then, finally, put a finer temper upon their military qualities by a dour, fatalistic Old Testament religion." He's referring to Calvinism. "And an ardent and consuming patriotism. Combine all these qualities and all these impulses in one individual, and you have the modern Boer, the most formidable antagonist to ever cross the path of Imperial Britain. Our military history has largely consisted in our conflicts with France. But Napoleon and all his veterans have never treated us as roughly as these hard-bitten farmers with their ancient theology and the inconveniently modern rifles," referring to the Mauser 7.7s. "As the British invaded the Transvaal May 1890, President Kruger was sent overseas to raise support for the Boer cause. He, of course, was willing to fight, but his people plead with him, 'You are more used to us in the propaganda war, in the public relations sphere. You must mobilize support,' which he did very effectively. He fled through Portuguese East Africa, what today is Mozambique, through Lourenço Marques, what today is Maputo. There he boarded the Dutch warship, the Gelderland, sent by Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands. Now, Queen Wilhelmina was only 18 or 19 years old at this time. She's the granddaughter of Queen Victoria. Netherlands was a significant country, but dwarfed it by Great Britain's navy. And this is a very brave move. In fact, at a time, there were cartoons published of Queen Wilhelmina, the bravest man in Europe, as a direct insult to the many other leaders who were afraid to directly confront Great Britain, who were the bullies on the block. They were the world superpower. Nobody could match the navy. America was a small backwater at that stage. Britain was the superpower. And here they were bullying and beating up this army of farmers, these two small little republics who were just trying to defend their own homes. From Britain's perspective, it's all about gold. From the Boer Republic's perspective, it's just about freedom and independence. And here Queen Wilhelmina sent her battleship, which, let's face it, could have been blown out of the water by the British. She defied her grandmother and the greatest power on earth. There's Wilhelmina with her grandmother, Victoria. And so, by defying the British naval blockade to transport them safely to Europe, this is quite an audacious act. I think every sailor on the ship was taking a great risk. Here you can see the route from Dar es Salaam. Interestingly enough, so the Gelderland came around to Lorenz Marx to collect them and then put in at German Dar es Salaam, Tanganyika, German East Africa, and then French de Djibouti, and sailed bravely through the Suez Canal and was disembarked at Marseille, and he made a triumphal travel across Europe, speaking throughout France and then being received in the Netherlands. And so this is how a French journal, Le Petit Journal, depicted the Dutch flag flying bravely, an angel presenting a wreath of honor on Queen Wilhelmina, who's rescued her great hero. And, of course, Oom Paul was very gracious and respectful to this young queen who had shown such courage. And you can see from the French publication at the time, he was the hero of the hour and of the day and of the decade. And tremendous amounts of material that you will see at Kruger House depicting both the Gelderland warship and busts and all kinds of awards that were given in honor of Paul Kruger, the most honored, respected man in the world at the turn of the century. And here you can see him being received by the President of the French Republic and the Fierclears flying enthusiastically in the streets of Paris and addressing the people from the balconies, huge crowds. In Europe, Paul Kruger was greatly honored as the principled leader of a courageous people who had been most unjustly invaded and abused by the British Empire. Artwork was produced depicting the copy of a woman lying on a hill on a grave site with burnt farms, burnt church, and gravestones of women and children in Transvaal. Depictions of the scorched earth policy, the heartless, cruel policies of Kitchener and Milner, and the bell tents they were placed in places without trees and without shade. In fact, the first winter, there was snow around, and people were dying of the cold. The British took these pictures of them dynamiting and burning farms. 30,000 Boer farms were destroyed. Destroying property, burning even the people's wagons, and British, in this case Australian troops, picturing themselves smashing up pianos, keyboards, eating and drinking what they can there before destroying the whole house. This is vandalism, and this is against the Geneva Convention. War against civilians is expressly forbidden by the rules of war at that time. Now, this is Louis Botha's house, farmhouse. So the British particularly filmed this before, during, and after the explosion as they dynamited his home. Vryheid District, dynamiting the house of General Louis Botha, 28th of August, 1901. On night of 2nd of February, 1902, a British column burnt down the church in Lindley. Why? Why a church? The Norwalspont concentration camp noticed the bell tents, noticed the absence of trees and shade. This was the conditions that the people put in. Aliwal North concentration camp. This is a picture taken by Emily Hobhouse of Lizzie van Sale holding the porcelain doll that she had given in the Bloemfontein concentration camp. The body of Jaapi van den Berg outside the tent where he died, Bloemfontein concentration camp. Also Emily Hobhouse documentation. Gijsbert Johannes Vermeulen of De Wetsdorp died at age 12 in Bloemfontein concentration camp. These children are victims of a war, what was called methods of barbarism by one British pastor. The body of Miss Botha of Lady Brunt, 18 years old when she died in Bloemfontein, her wish was that the fear clear be draped around her chest after death. So many orphans. In any war, you expect men to be casualties. But the Anglo-Boer War was the first one where 5 to 6 times more men, women, more women and children died than the men. Visitors to Kruger House in Church Street, Pretoria, can see many of the trophies and awards granted by the Russian Tsar, the Emperor of Austria, Kaiser Wilhelm II of Germany, from the Dutch, the French, Italians, the Swiss, the Americans. And these are representing different artworks, medallions, songs, porcelain, china, depicting the courage of the Boers and the atrocities of the British. Ein Festerberg ist unser Gott, a mighty fortress is our God. Queen Wilhelmina, with both the Dutch flag and the Vierkleur of the orange of the Transvaal. And many of these pictures, I've taken these pictures all in the Kruger House, the annex at the back where they have all the accolades for President Paul Kruger at the time. Greatly honored, many certificates of appreciation and of honor. And President Martina Steyn, who, as president of the Orange Free State, was such a principled man. He said, when politicians declare war, they admit that they have failed as politicians. And if we declare war, then we cannot send other men's children to war without ourselves going to war. And so he joined the commandos, and he fought under General Christian De Wet as one of his commandos, not interfering in battle tactics. He said, when the time comes to sit at the peace table, then we will again, then you call on us and we will sit at the table and again take up our job as politicians. But in the interim, we must fight as commandos along with every other farmer. And he fought the whole war. He was a bitter ender. President Martina Steyn fought to the very end. And in fact, he even refused to sign the peace because he thought it was not good enough. They were, of course, greatly distanced in age. President Martina Steyn was in his 40s, of course, Oom Paul was at this stage about 78. And so different artistic depictions of the battles between the British and the Boers and the cavalry battles and the fights against the blockhouses and the barbed wire. Interestingly enough, there were Swedish, Norwegian, Danish and Finnish residents in the Transvaal who established a Scandinavian organization of 190 members, and they were active and involved, and there was a Norwegian field ambulance. And so interesting about the Scandinavian Corps. You can see different of the awards, and again, this is from Germany. German awards to President Kruger. Eindracht macht Macht. In unity is strength. There are busts of the president from Philadelphia in North America, presented to Paul Kruger with lots of letters and petitions and of support and so on from children. This whole case was delivered to him. And a message to Paul Kruger from America to Africa by the Philadelphia North American Special Messenger. And extraordinary documentation showing how the Boers were so respected and President Paul Kruger was so honored and respected in his time. And from Italy, from Mexico, from Switzerland, from Italy. And in different script, here in Cyrillic script, and to his honor, S.F. Kruger. And depicting the different leaders. In this case, in the middle, it's got General Joubert, who was the Commandant General of the Boer forces. And this magnificent Russian trophy depicting the Boers' courageous battles. And again, in Cyrillic script, honoring President Kruger. And you can see the eagle depicted here. This is now from Rusland, from Russia. This is from the Austrians, the double-headed eagle of the Austrian Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, again with the Transvaal and the Orange Free State flags. All of this is a treasure, just showing again how at the time the Boers were so honored. Here's a cartoon showing the bull representing Paul Kruger goring the British lion, and you can see the other nations of Europe standing by, inactive but admiring. Here, they correctly depict the British Foreign Secretary or Colonial Secretary, Chamberlain, as Neville Chamberlain, as the opponent of Paul Kruger, which is more accurate. Again, you can see French honors and depictions of the courage, and they had special plays and events. These are just some of the publications. You can see battles are not just won by soldiers in the field, but by journalists and by advocates and activists back at home too. Tremendous amounts of interesting innovations showing the different countries that are honoring President Paul Kruger, their various flags. Paul died in exile in Clarence, Switzerland, the 14th of July, 1904. Bastille Day, interestingly enough. French day that they commemorate, beginning of French Revolution. At the other end here, they depict the death room where Paul Kruger died in, the bed, the chairs, the organ. On the 16th of December, 1904, his remains were reburied in Heroes Acre in Church Street Cemetery, Pretoria, in occupied Transvaal colony. And here you can see some of the people who have turned out for the funeral of Paul Kruger while the British are ruling Transvaal. So this is quite an act of resistance. And here, a statue of Paul Kruger in his characteristic formal dress stands in the center of Church Square, Pretoria, in front of the Volksraad, or the Parliament of the Transvaal Republic. And they expanded it in time to include depictions of important parts of his life as a voortrekker, as a commando leader, Stephanus Johannes Paulus Kruger. And this is one of the most iconic pictures of him, something akin to the David Livingstone statue up at Victoria Falls. And so you can see the different type of Boer honor guard around him, fighting with their foreliers, and being depicted all the way through to the more modern cartridge type weapons that they were using, like here the Martini Henry 45 caliber rifles that they would have been using in the First Anglo-Boer War, Battle of Majuba. And the Supreme Court of the Transvaal, Church Square is a fascinating place. You can see a lot of the architecture of the Transvaal Republic. The battles that he fought being depicted, and his campaigns on the political trail, campaigning for president. This would depict his negotiations with the British for the independence of Transvaal in 1881. And you can see depicted the different people, including tribal people, coming to honor Paul Kruger at his burial. The Krugerrand gold coin is named in his honor and features his face on the one side and a springbok on the other. A street in St. Gallen, Switzerland, Krugerstrasse, was named after him. But his greatest monument is the Kruger National Park, the greatest game reserve on earth. Kruger House is a very humble little home for a presidential home of a country that had such huge wealth at that stage, considering gold mines. Barney Mbata, who is the Jewish diamond miner, the main competitor to Cecil John Rhodes, tried to ingratiate himself with President Paul Kruger by donating two lion statues outside the president's house, so that's where they come from. And by the way, do you know how Cecil Rhodes bought out Barney and Barter to gain complete consolidated control of the diamond mines? Because Barney and Barter would not sell. But Cecil Rhodes knew every man's weakness. And so no gentleman's club would allow a Jew a membership. In fact, my father was the secretary of the Bulawayo Club. And my mother once said, why are no blacks, Jews, and women allowed as members of the Bulawayo Club? And my father's response was, well, Jews aren't gentlemen. And so it's a gentleman's club. And Barney and Barter, he wasn't interested in Cecil Rhodes' money. Cecil Rhodes says, you sell me your diamonds, I'll get you membership in the Kimberley Club. And Barney sold for that. He wanted membership in the club because it was a status thing. So Cecil Rhodes knew people have their price, and for him, it was to be accepted as a member of the gentleman's club. So if you go to Kruger House, you can see the decor, very much the style of the time was wallpaper. Everything's very busy in the Victorian era type style. Dinner table doesn't look very big. He couldn't have fitted all of his children and grandchildren around it, but one wonders how they managed. And interesting gifts that they would have had. His desk was a very humble desk. And you can see depicted here the original telephones, which have been party line telephone exchanges. We've got to listen to your specific ring. Various trowels for laying foundation stones of different key parts. So Kruger House is very interesting. Not a very big bed for a double bed, actually. And you can see where the kitchen, a lot of work and hospitality had to be organized here. But again, very nice depictions of the kind of technology that they had, the kind of kitchen utensils that they were using. Kruger House is interesting, and it's well worth a good visit. And it would be nice if it was run by people who actually knew something about President Paul Kruger. But sadly, it's in government hands, and it's got people who ask any question about anything. They know nothing about anything to do with Paul Kruger, the Anglo-Boer War, and so on. You wonder how they get this job. There's got to be people who love the history who'd want to share with guests from around the world what's going on. But I've been here many times, taken many guests, and every time I've checked, whoever is there knows nothing about anything. So you don't know how they employ people. Depicting Pader Kroll, laying the stones of determination, we will fight for our independence. The railway line to Lorenzo Marx, a very important stage in Paul Kruger's presidency, that they now had independent access to the sea and were not dependent on Durban or Cape Town Harbour. They could go through Portuguese East Africa without bowing to Britain. An Osavar that he used is at the house too, and bear in mind he travelled far and wide. The Transvaal emblems, and this is Railway 1. This would have been the president's railway carriage. And you see the open Bible dominating in his room, and in the main car where he would have had cabinet meetings while traveling. So this was, and notice this great Dutch master's work from the Reformation era and the fighting for the independence of the people of the Netherlands from Spain, because Netherlands, remember, was a Spanish colony at the time of the Reformation. It was Prince William of Orange, after whom the Orange River is named, an Orange Free State, who secured Dutch independence from Spain. Bibles, hymn books, psalm books, all of this in Railway 1. And their kitchen on the train, this represents a really phenomenal achievement that they were able to put railways right across the Transvaal all the way to the port at Lorenzo Marx. And this is a depiction of the bedroom in which he died in Switzerland, and you will see depicted in the film just now as well. People gave him gifts of like the presidential chair, different kinds of woodwork, and this foot stand here to help him into his bunk in the Gelderland was made by the sailors. So obviously Paul Kruger impressed people very much, all the different amazing artwork. I wrote an article for Jeugd Tijdschrift on Paul Kruger, which was published. And, of course, there's a chapter on Paul Kruger in our Sketches from South African History, which is now translated in Afrikaans, Sketse uit die Suid-Afrikaanse geskiedenis. I think our Afrikaans translation is better than English one, because we got more pictures and we added chapters also from Stephen Mitford Goodson and from Koen Elgin. And so, in fact, the Sketse book is bigger and has more chapters and far more pictures than our English translation that was done first. We have an article on Paul Kruger with these different links on a reformationessay.org website. And there's a variety of audios which have been included into our South African History audio box set. Are there any questions, any statements about Paul Kruger that I should have added?
One of the interesting things about the Boers in the fighting with the British was their smokeless ammunition. And these British just couldn't see where these guys were. And they got that from Germany. And they had enormous amounts of ammunition by the time the war broke out.
And they needed it.
And I think you were referring to Barney Barnato, not Umbalto, is it? Or do you say?
Barney Barnato, that is correct. Barnato. The Jewish opposition, competition to Cecil Rhodes. Very interesting as Cecil Rhodes...
A lot of conspiracy theory about how Barnato died.
Oh, well, that's another story entirely.
Yeah,
story. He disappeared very surprisingly, just like overboard.
Yeah.
Nobody saw a thing, nobody knows what happened. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
So that's why the conspiracy theories.
Yes. Well, he served his usefulness. He managed to give his huge amount or sell over to Cecil Rhodes. Hence De Beers, Anglo-American, consolidated everything. Yeah, and then he disappears. How convenient is that? Like Diesel, the German engineer who did the diesel engines, which powered the British Navy and everything else. Petroleum was the competition. He was working on biofuel. And next thing, he disappears overboard ship as well. And nobody knew a thing, saw a thing. And next thing is the biofuel became illegal by the Americans banning the use of alcohol. And it wasn't primarily to stop people drinking alcohol. It was Rockefeller who put his whole effort behind this because wanted to prevent... Ford Motor Company was initially all using a biofuel, an alcohol mix. And so they were stalled until they moved on to petrol. And at that point, they rescinded the ban on, what was the 14th Amendment or something, which forbid alcohol in America. It was not so much about human consumption, it was to prevent it for the engines, which gave a monopoly to the petroleum industry, which was completely controlled by the Rockefeller who controlled everything, Standard Oil and all that. So getting rid of diesel and turning diesel from primarily biofuel to a byproduct of petroleum and killing Ford Motor Company's original engines, which were all aimed at using alcohol-based fuel and biofuel. Interesting. That's something that comes out in the Fuel film too. I remember when we had postage stamps honoring Paul Kruger, but he's an honorable man. This is back in the days when you had real statesmen. This man wasn't a politician in the normal sense. Because he really worked for the good of the people. He didn't accumulate wealth for himself. He was serving the people and accessible. Now, Paul Kruger still stands out as the honorable, principled leader of the people, a true man of the people, not the way these politicians work today. And in fact, I think in my lifetime, we've only had a leader to be compared to him closely would have been probably Ian Smith, just a man of the people on the ground, no nonsense, no accumulating wealth, no hidden agenda, doesn't belong to the banks and so on. And Paul Kruger should be honored by all. And I know there's some people who don't like him, but the fact is he's the original anti-colonialist. He's the original anti-imperialist. He fought against the British Empire. He made strong stand. And he should be honored by all, especially those who believe in nature conservation, independence of peoples, principled man, incorruptible. And I think Milner and Cecil Rhodes also commented on the fact that this man had no interest in money. In other words, he couldn't be bought.